stop him, but it did hinder his efforts just enough so that a flicker of energy passed through the barrier. His muscles seized as he was hit. His back arched, and his arms and head were thrown back. Every nerve in Bane's body lit up as if it were on fire. The pain lasted only an instant, but it was enough to knock him to the floor in a crumpled heap. He didn't stay down, however. He sprang back to his feet, simultaneously drawing his lightsaber with his right hand as he sent a blast of lightning out from the fingertips of his left. The violet bolts should have incinerated all four of his targets on the balcony, yet again, the strange power interfering with his ability to draw upon the Force hindered his efforts. Three of the victims were electrocuted, dying before they even had a chance to scream. The fourth, however, managed to throw herself back from the balcony's edge, evading the deadly attack. Bane never got a chance to finish her off. A pair of soldiers emerged from a hallway on the left, and three more appeared from the hall on the right. They opened fire with tangle guns, sending out long streams of sticky synthetic webbing. The soldiers were smart. They coordinated their efforts. Two fired at his feet, looking to glue him to the floor. The others aimed for the chest and torso, looking to pin his arms to his sides with the viscous strings. But Bane wasn't about to let himself become immobilized. Leaping up, he grabbed onto the chandelier hanging from the ceiling, holding himself with his free hand. Swinging his legs to build momentum, he launched himself up over the railing and onto the balcony, giving him the advantage of higher ground. He came down with a heavy thud. The inexplicable power that still impeded his connection to the Force, robbing him of a graceful landing. The bodies of the three dead soldiers were scattered about him. To his right were the stairs, leading back down to the foyer. Straight ahead was a long hall, leading to another wing of the mansion. A female Itochi stood at the far end of the hall, a long, thin knife held in each hand. She grinned at Bane, and in that moment he knew who was interfering with his ability to use the Force. She broke into a run, charging down the hall toward him. Bane dropped into a fighting crouch to meet her attack, knowing her knives were no match for his lightsaber. It was only then that he noticed the flash grenades lying by the dead bodies at his feet. They exploded with a burst of intense light and chemical smoke that blinded Bane. Disoriented, he fell back against the balcony's railing. An instant later, he felt the sole of the Itochi's boots strike him hard in the chest, sending him tumbling backward over the banister to the marble floor 4 meters below. He hit the ground hard enough to knock the breath from his body, leaving him gasping for air. The impact jarred his lightsaber from his grip, sending it skittering across the floor. An instant later, his prone form was enveloped by the webbing from the tangle guns, pinning him to the ground. Blind and immobilized, Darth Bane's fury saved him. Years of training allowed him to focus all his pain and rage in one single instant, drawing on it so he could unleash the full power of the dark side. Once again, he felt the Itochi's barrier opposing his efforts, but this time he tore through it like it wasn't even there. For a moment, it was as if the world around him was frozen in place. Though his eyes were still suffering the effects of the flash grenade, the Force rushing through his body gave him an otherworldly awareness of his surroundings. The scene was burned into his brain in exquisite detail. The soldiers were scattered about the foyer, scrambling to take up new positions in preparation for the next stage of the battle. They were well trained, but he could still sense their fear. They knew the fight was far from over. The Itochi had leapt over the railing in pursuit of him. She hung poised in the air above him, her twin blades held out to either side as she braced for landing. Bane could even see himself lying on the floor, buried beneath a thick wet blanket of rapidly drying chemical adhesive. The frozen tableau lasted only a fraction of an instant, but it told the Dark Lord everything he needed to know. And then the instant was gone, and everything became a blur of motion again. The Itochi landed just as Bane unleashed a wave of crackling electricity that burned away the webbing of the tangle guns. She dropped to one knee and tried to stab her knives into him as he lay on the floor, but through the Force, Bane saw her coming. He managed to roll aside, escaping with only a long, deep cut along one of his forearms as he scrambled back to his feet. In response to his call, his lightsaber flew up from the floor and into his waiting hand. But the Itochi was already retreating. Now that he was no longer helpless, she was eager to fall back and let others step in. Several more flash grenades exploded around him, but Bane was unaffected. He was no longer relying on his physical sight to guide him. Fresh streams of webbing arced across the room toward him, but this time he incinerated them while they were still in the air. Half a dozen concussion grenades tossed in from every side clattered on the floor at his feet. As they exploded, Bane simply enveloped himself in the force, creating a protective cocoon that absorbed the impact and left him standing completely unharmed. Two men popped up from behind a nearby couch and fired at him from point-blank range with their stun guns. Bane slapped the incoming bolts away with his lightsaber, then thrust out a hand to send the couch slamming straight back into the wall, crushing the men who'd been using it for cover. Then he was on the move, bearing down on two of the soldiers carrying tangle guns. He sliced them both in half horizontally with a single blow from his lightsaber, carving a perfect line just above their belts. Another volley of stun bolts came too late to save them. Bane was already gone. A single flip, and he was back on the balcony again, face to face with the Itochi. "You can't escape," he told her.
"I wasn't trying to,"
she hissed back at him, lunging forward with her knives. She was quicker than Bane expected, coming in low and fast. He didn't have time to simply chop her down. Instead, he had to spin out of the way. He tried to take one of her arms with his lightsaber on a counter thrust as she slipped past. But the Itochi anticipated his move and managed to contort her body so that his blade caught nothing but air. They'd switched positions from their first engagement. She was now the one standing with her back to the balcony railing. Bane thrust out with the force, the impact sending her hurtling backward over the railing as her kick had done to him less than a minute earlier. Somehow the Itochi managed to turn in the air so that she landed on her feet. Because of this, she was able to spring to safety when Bane sent a blast of lightning hurtling down toward her, instead of her charred corpse. It left only a smoking circle on the floor. Soldiers were firing their stun guns at him again from the stairwell. Bane didn't even bother to strike back at them. He simply dodged their attack by vaulting over the railing and dropping back down to the floor below. The soldiers were nothing to him. It was the Itochi he was interested in now. She was the only opponent who posed any real threat. Eliminate her, and he could deal with the soldiers at his leisure. He landed on the floor in a crouch, absorbing the impact, and then everything went black. The Huntress couldn't say how long it had been since she'd carved her Senflax-coated blade through the flesh of the Sith Lord's forearm. But the neurotoxin had to take effect soon. Jedder was dead, crushed against the wall by a piece of flying furniture. At least five other soldiers were already down, too. The Sith Lord was focusing his efforts on her. The Itochi knew she couldn't beat him. He was too strong. The tricks she had used against the Jedi had slowed him down at first, but now they had no effect at all. The Senflax was her only hope of surviving. She saw the Sith leaping down from the balcony, coming after her. He hit the floor, turned toward her, and collapsed. The big man lay on his side, eyes open and seeming to stare right at her. The pupils were bloodshot from the chemicals in the flash grenades. The Huntress waited until he blinked. Then, seeing no other signs of movement, she held up her hand and shouted,
"Ceasefire! Ceasefire!"
She thought briefly that his paralysis might be a trick, then discarded the notion. The Sith didn't need subterfuge to win the battle. It was obvious he had them overmatched. The only explanation was that Sarah's drug had finally worked its magic. According to the instructions she had been given, they had 4 hours before they needed to administer the next dose. With Jedder dead, the hired soldiers were staring at her, waiting for their next orders. The Huntress closed her eyes and reached out with her mind, seeking guidance. Someone else was coming. The blonde woman from the camp on Ambria.
"You three, go bring the airspeeders around to the front of the house," the Huntress barked. "The rest of you gather up the bodies. Don't leave anything behind that could link this to the princess."
The survivors hustled to follow her commands. She didn't bother to tell them to hurry. They were already moving as fast as they could,
eager to get away from this place where so many of their comrades in arms had fallen. On an impulse, she bent down and retrieved the now-extinguished lightsaber from where it lay on the floor beside the fallen Sith. She turned the curved handle over, inspecting it carefully. She ignited the weapon and was surprised by its weightlessness. "What about this?" one of the soldiers asked, holding up the duffel bag the Sith had dropped in the first few seconds of the attack.
"Take it with us,"
she said absently, not even bothering to look over.
"Give it to the princess."
Infatuated with her new toy, she made a few slow, experimental swings with the unfamiliar weapon before extinguishing it and secreting it away in one of the pockets inside her robe, just as she had done with the strange crystal pyramid from the library out back. 5 minutes later, they had the prisoner and their casualties in the back of the speeders, and they were heading to the drop shuttle that would take them back to Doan. Chapter 15. As Zanna brought the Victory in to touch down in her designated hangar at the Sutric 4 starport, she felt a sudden sense of uneasiness. "Something wrong?" Set asked from the passenger seat, picking up on her discomfort.
"I'm about to challenge my master in a battle to the death, and I'm still not sure if I made a mistake picking you as my apprentice," she thought.
Then said out loud,
"It's nothing."
Set shrugged. He was sitting with his chair reclined, his legs stretched out, and his feet resting on the dash. If he was feeling any anxiety himself, it was well masked. With the ship on the ground, Zanna cut the engines. She couldn't shake the feeling that something was very wrong, but she had come too far to turn back now.
"Is this a premonition of my own death?
Will Bane end my life tonight?" "What now?" Set asked, sitting up and swinging his legs down to the floor. When he had first accepted Zanna's offer, she had sensed a clear reluctance in him. Over the course of the trip to Sutric, however, he seemed to have warmed to the idea. Now he appeared almost eager, though Zanna was aware this could all be an act.
"When we arrive at the estate, you need to wait outside," she said out loud.
"My master doesn't like uninvited guests."
"I'll hide in the bushes like a scared little cath pup,"
he promised.
"This isn't a game," she warned him.
"Everything's a game," he replied. "This is just one you really can't afford to lose."
"If I lose, you might end up dead too."
"Or I could end up as your master's new apprentice,"
he countered with a sly grin.
"You wouldn't find him nearly as tolerant of your impertinence."
"Then I truly hope you win. Is that all, master?"
When Zanna nodded, Set rose from his seat and executed a deep bow, his head dipping down so low, his long hair tumbled forward to hang like a silver curtain covering his head and face.
"Lead and I will follow,"
he offered, though there was something almost mocking in his tone. She couldn't help but wonder what Bane would have done in response to Set's irreverent behavior. The consequences would no doubt have been harsh. Zanna, however, was content to let the Dark Jedi have his fun. She had wounded his ego, humiliating him by so easily overpowering him during their confrontation. It was important to let him regain his confidence. And if his jests made it easier for him to accept his role as apprentice, she was willing to put up with them. To a point. Set understood all this, of course. She knew he was pushing her, testing the limits and boundaries of their relationship. At the same time, Zanna had been testing him. So far, he had been smart enough to know where to draw the line. Leaving their bags on the ship, Zanna and Set made their way from the hangar to the small customs building at the front of the starport. Chet, the young customs officer who had spoken to her the last time she'd left Sutric, was on duty again.
"Good evening, Mistress Omek," he said with a tilt of his head. "I'll have someone bring your speeder around."
"Thank you, Chet."
"Want me to send someone for your bags?"
"I'll pick them up in the morning, if I'm still alive," she thought.
"Aren't you going to introduce me to your friend?"
Set chimed in. Zanna silenced him with a glare. Chet obviously caught the exchange, but what he made of it, Zanna wasn't sure. A few seconds of silence passed before the customs official said,
"May I speak with you alone for a moment, Mistress Omek?"
curious, Xana nodded at Set, who turned and walked away in the other direction, looking mildly offended.
Had an unregistered dropship into atmosphere a few hours ago, Chet whispered once Set was out of earshot. Touched down in the jungle about 100 kilometers east of the starport.
Odd, Xana thought.
Siutric IV was located at the nexus of several key trade routes, but the tariffs and taxes charged by the customs stations were minimal. No legitimate merchant would incur the risk of landing in the untamed jungle just to avoid some paperwork and save a handful of credits. And there weren't any smuggling operations active in the region. If there were, she and Bane would have known about them.
Any idea who they were?
Chet shrugged. They landed outside our jurisdiction, and they didn't send off an emergency beacon, so nobody bothered to send a patrol to investigate. She wasn't surprised at the lack of official urgency generated by the unregistered vessel. Siutric was generally a law-abiding world. As a result, planetary security was somewhat lax. It was one of the reasons Bane had chosen to take up residence here. She was intrigued, however. Did the dropship have anything to do with the unease she'd felt upon landing?
You said they touched down to the east. Our estate is on the eastern edge of the city, she thought.
Yeah. Showed up on the sensors a couple of hours before your brother got back.
My brother?
Oh, Chet said, mildly surprised. I just assumed you knew. He left the day after you did. Just got back tonight.
Any idea where he went?
The customs official shook his head. Sorry.
Xana's mind was spinning with 1,000 possibilities as the valet arrived with her speeder. Bane almost never left Siutric. If he had business, people came to him, or he sent Xana. Something must have come up that was too important for him to wait for her to get back. Either that, or he had business he wanted to deal with personally. And if that was the case, was it possible he had sent her to Doan as a way to get rid of her temporarily? She could think of only one reason Bane would have wanted to keep her from knowing about his journey. He was looking for someone to replace her.
Trouble? Set asked, wandering over to see what was going on.
It's fine, Xana replied, not wanting to reveal her apprehension to either of the men. She climbed into the speeder and nodded at Set to do the same. Thanks for the update, Chet. As the speeder roared to life and took to the air, she began to consider her options. If Bane was alone, she would challenge him as she planned. However, if Bane had found someone else to become his heir, things would get more complicated. If Bane had cast her aside, did the rule of two still apply to her? Or would Bane and his new apprentice combine their strength to defeat her as an enemy of the Sith? If that happened, she wouldn't be able to survive alone. If things went bad, she didn't really know if the Dark Jedi sitting beside her would come to her aid, but she didn't have any real choice. She had decided to confront Bane tonight, and she wasn't about to turn back now. She'd waited too long for this moment, put it off too many times before. Be on your guard when we land, she warned Set. I'm always on guard, he assured her. Xana's apprehension continued to mount as she approached the estate, but as she drew nearer, she realized she couldn't sense her master's presence. Puzzled, she brought the speeder into land and saw that the front door was wide open.
Wait here,
she instructed Set. With one hand on the hilt of her lightsaber, she approached the open door cautiously and peeked inside. At first glance, the damage was almost more than she could comprehend. The plaster on the walls was cracked and burned in at least a dozen places. The marble floors were scratched and scorched. Sticky strands of synthetic webbing and flakes of ash were everywhere. Every piece of furniture she could see was either smashed or overturned. Carefully, she made her way upstairs, still wary despite not sensing anyone else in the building. A quick inspection of the various rooms assured her that there was no immediate danger, and she sheathed her lightsaber. It seemed as if most of the damage had been confined to the foyer and the sitting room just off the mansion's entrance. If there were answers to be had, she'd most likely find them there. When she returned to the front of the manse, she wasn't surprised to see that Set had disobeyed her orders. He was sitting on a chair that had survived relatively unscathed, his legs crossed and a glass of wine in his hand, casually waiting for her to arrive. A freshly opened bottle stood beside him on the floor.
"Your master has excellent taste," he said, raising the glass and drinking a toast to the absent host.
It was clear from the evidence that someone had attacked Bane in the mansion, and it was only logical to assume they must have been on the dropship. Who they were and why they had come, however, were still mysteries she couldn't solve.
"I told you to wait in the speeder," she said, descending the stairs and closing the mansion door.
"I was bored," he answered with a shrug, taking another sip of wine before changing topics.
"Looks like that confrontation you were expecting isn't going to happen after all. I guess you're the new Sith Master by default."
"It doesn't work that way," Xana muttered. "Besides, Darth Bane's still alive. If he was dead, I would have felt it."
"Somehow I was afraid you'd say that,"
he said, bending forward to grab the wine bottle and refill his empty glass.
"Any idea who might have done this?"
"None of our enemies even knows the Sith still exist," Xana reminded him.
"I get the feeling there's something you're not telling me,"
Set noted. A second later, he added,
"Master,
Bane just arrived back on Ciutric tonight." She saw no reason not to tell him what she had learned. "And Chet told me an unidentified dropship touched down near the estate a short time before he arrived."
"You think the two are related?"
"I don't believe in coincidence," she replied. After a moment, she decided to come clean with Set. "I think Bane might have sent me to Doan just to get me out of the way for a while. I think he was actually interested in something completely unrelated."
"Don't be so sure,"
Set replied, holding up what appeared to be a small blue button. "Where did you find that?"
"Wedged into the wreckage of what used to be a couch over there in the corner," he replied, tossing it to her.
She reached out with one hand, easily snatching it from the air. A splash of dried blood was smeared across the surface, partially obscuring the gold insignia.
"That's the symbol of the Doan royal house,"
Set told her as she studied the button.
"Doan?"
Xana was more confused than ever.
"Why would someone from Doan come here? How would they even find us?"
Set shrugged.
"You're the master. You tell me."
Xana didn't answer right away. Chewing on her lower lip, she analyzed the situation carefully, examining it from every angle. There were still too many unknowns for her to come up with a perfect plan, but she knew what had to be done.
"We need to go to Doan."
"Hold on a second," Set protested, holding up his hands. "Are you sure you want to do that? I mean, even if your master's still alive, it looks to me like he's probably a prisoner."
"Yes, a prisoner on Doan."
"So what? We're going to rescue him just so you can try and kill him yourself?"
"That would be in accordance with the rule of two," Xana thought.
But there were other, more practical reasons to go. "My master is smart, powerful, and cunning. He's too dangerous to ignore. If they're holding him prisoner, he might find a way to escape. If he does, he will come after me. But it will be at a time and place of his choosing, not mine. Even if he never escapes, it's likely whoever took him will interrogate him for information. He may reveal something that exposes my existence to the Jedi, or some other enemy. I'm not willing to take that chance.
Plus, I want to know who attacked him and why.
And if they did capture him, I want to know how they did it. What tactics did they use to bring down such a formidable opponent? And how can I make sure it never happens to me?"
"So this is all about you tying up loose ends?"
She heard reluctance in his voice, the same reluctance she'd sensed when she'd first offered to take him on as her apprentice. Set had spent much of his life running from problems rather than solving them. She knew he'd rather avoid his enemies than seek a way to destroy them. In time, she would cure him of this. As his master, she would teach him the ways of the Sith. For now, however, she simply needed his help.
"I have to go meet with someone,"
she said, remembering that Chet had told her Bane had met with Argal Ten only a few days before all this had begun. It was possible the Collector had found some interesting Sith manuscript that had prompted Bane to leave Ciutric.
"Am I coming with you?" Xana shook her head. You need to find out everything you can about Doan. If the royal family was involved, where would they take my master? And how can we find him? Set gave a dissatisfied snort. So now I'm a glorified librarian. Meet me back here in 2 days, Xana said, ignoring his complaint. By then, I'll have figured out what to do next. When Xana returned to the mansion after meeting with Argyle Ten, she was mildly surprised to find Set there waiting for her. She had half expected him not to show up. The mission she had sent him on had been important, but it had also been a test of his commitment. If he was having second thoughts about becoming her apprentice, sending him away would have given him the perfect opportunity to try to disappear. The fact that he had come back was a sign that maybe he was a suitable choice after all. She was relieved to see that things seemed to be improving with Set, because her meeting with Argyle Ten had not gone well. At first, he had refused to discuss his business with Bane, claiming discretion was the cornerstone of his business. Xana had done her best to persuade him to make an exception through non-violent means. She knew Argyle had access to rare Sith manuscripts, and she didn't want to throw away a potentially valuable resource. However, much to her dismay, he'd shown a surprising integrity when it came to protecting his client's confidentiality. In the end, she'd had to turn to less pleasant methods to make him talk. Of course, by resorting to brutal interrogation, she had revealed herself as something more than just an interested collector. And after that, she couldn't leave him alive. The risk of Argyle telling someone about her was too great. The information might make it back to the Jedi and cause them to investigate. Above all else, it was critical that the Sith remained hidden. So Xana was left with no choice but to eliminate Argyle. The real tragedy was that she never did manage to get anything more than a single name out of him. Darth Undedu. Argyle hadn't known why Bane was interested in this particular Sith Lord, and without more to go on, Xana was stuck.
Welcome back, Master, Set said by way of greeting. You'll be happy to hear that I've learned everything one could possibly ever want to know about a miserable little pit of a world like Doan.
Too bad I didn't send you to find out about Darth Undedu, she muttered, letting her frustrations boil up to the surface.
Did you say Undedu?
Set asked, obviously startled.
The immortal God King of Prakith?
Xana's jaw nearly hit the floor.
You've heard of him? Ah, so now I have something to teach you,
Set said with a grin, recovering from his initial surprise.
Does that make me the master?
Xana was in no mood for his jokes. Tell me what you know about Undedu. To his credit, Set picked up on her tone and took on a more serious demeanor. My last few years with the Jedi were spent serving under an Ithorian master named Oba. He explained,
I've heard of him. He's on the Council of First Knowledge. Ever since their battle against the Jedi on Tython, Bane had insisted they both know the name and reputation of every master in the Order.
Set raised one eyebrow.
Impressive.
Consider that your first lesson. Know your enemy as well as you know yourself.
Noted. May I continue?
Xana nodded.
While under Master Oba's insufferable tutelage, much of my time was spent researching the histories of the ancient Sith. The hammer-headed old fool had this grand idea he could best serve the light by making a catalog of every known Sith holocron, then sending out his agents to round them up and bring them back to the Jedi Temple for safekeeping. In my research, I happened on several references to a man named Darth Undedu. The Jedi had worked hard to remove all mention of him from the galactic record, but as a member of the Order, I had access to the original confiscated materials.
Get to the point, Xana warned him.
Of course. Undedu ruled over the world of Prakith as a god. At least he did until the hyperlanes into the deep core collapsed, effectively cutting the planet off from the rest of the galaxy. There was, however, some evidence to support the theory that Undedu created a holocron during his reign. Master Oba believed it was still on Prakith, though he felt a journey into the deep core to retrieve it was too dangerous. To be honest, I kind of agreed with him.
What's so special about Undedu's holocron?
Xana demanded. You nearly swallowed your tongue when I mentioned his name.
If the legends are to be believed, Andedu's holocron contains the secret of eternal life.
Xana cursed under her breath as all the pieces tumbled into place. Somehow Bane must have learned of Andedu's holocron and gone to Prakith to claim it. He was trying to become immortal. That's why he had sent her off to Doan, so she wouldn't find out what he was up to. Despite everything he had taught her about the rule of two, he wasn't willing to accept the idea that his apprentice would one day surpass him. He actually thought that if he could find a way to stop the ravages of time and age, he could rule the Sith forever.
This is a betrayal of everything you taught me, she thought. You said you were teaching me all your secrets. You said the legacy of the Sith would one day be mine to carry on. You lied to me.
Do you think it's possible your master actually went to Prakith and found Andedu's holocron?
Set asked, making no effort to conceal the naked hunger in his voice. Bane's journeyed into the Deep Core before, she admitted, remembering his trip to Tython.
So you finally decided to tell me your master's name.
Xana uttered another silent swear. She had meant to keep that information to herself as long as Bane was alive. But the realization of what he had done, of how he had betrayed the rule of two, had her rattled.
I still don't understand how this ties in with Doan,
Set wondered aloud.
That was one piece of the puzzle Xana hadn't figured out yet either, though she had a feeling it was all connected somehow.
Whoever attacked him must have come for the holocron, she guessed. Whoever took Bane would have taken the artifact as well.
So you think it's on Doan?
It was obvious Set was more interested in claiming the holocron than in finding and dealing with Bane. But Xana had no idea who or what she would face when she went back to the mining world. And she suspected she'd need all the help she could get.
You may not have been willing to risk a trip into the Deep Core to claim Andedu's holocron, but are you willing to travel back to Doan one more time?
Set graced her with another of his extravagant bows.
Lead the way, Master.
Chapter 16
Sarah sat alone in the small windowless office, trying to gather her courage. The only furnishings were a simple desk and the chair she currently occupied. The unadorned walls were a depressing shade of brown, their stone surface rough and unfinished. A small safe had been built into the rock wall, and a single door led out into the hall beyond. The princess wasn't naive. She understood that the room reflected the opinion most off-worlders had of Doan. They saw it as an ugly, grimy pit. She knew that those who lived in the strip mines on the planet's surface felt the same. But she had seen the planet's true beauty. Built on the plateaus atop the rock columns, towering high above the choking clouds of dust and pollution, the cities of the nobility were blessed with bright blue skies nearly every day of the year. Every morning, the rising sun reflected off the burnished spires of castles built on plateaus hundreds of kilometers to the east, lighting them up like candles in the gray of the early dawn. In the evening, the sandstorms rolling across the desert seemed to dance on the horizon, alive with flickering bursts of color as the setting sun flashed off quartz chips caught up in their swirling embrace. Even after all these years, it could still take her breath away. Just as it had when she first came to Doan. After leaving her father's camp on Ambria, she had traveled the worlds of the Outer Rim, using what he had taught her to help the less fortunate, and establishing her reputation as a skilled healer. When the Crown Prince contracted a mysterious illness, the king had hired her to tend to his son. She had instantly recognized the symptoms of Eidolian fever, a deadly but treatable infection. For 3 months, she nursed him slowly back to health, and by the time Garen recovered, the two of them were in love.
You saved his life then, but you didn't have the power to save him from the terrorists. If you were stronger, he might still be alive.
Sarah shook her head in momentary confusion. The thought had been in her own voice, but it had somehow seemed alien, as if someone else was speaking inside her head. Except for herself, the office was clearly empty. The door was closed, and with the sparse furnishing, there was no place for someone to hide. She cast a wary glance at the small, four-sided pyramid sitting on the edge of the desk. It had been stashed away almost carelessly in a small duffel bag the mercenaries had brought back to her. Sarah's connection to the Force was strong enough for her to feel the power inside the artifact, trapped beneath the surface, just waiting to be released. Why didn't the Itachi claim this for herself, she thought. She should have sensed its power too, even hidden inside the bag. Something else must have drawn her attention. Picking up the pyramid and holding it at arm's length, she crossed the room to the wall safe. Punching in the combination, she unlocked it and placed the pyramid inside, then closed the door, sealing it safely away. The man in the dungeon was a Sith Lord. Anything he possessed was an instrument of the dark side. Sarah wasn't interested in exploring its power. She was only interested in him. He had arrived 3 days ago, yet she still had not gone to speak with him. As per her instructions, he had been kept drugged and helpless the entire time. Now she knew she couldn't put it off any longer. It was time to go face her demons. Her face set in grim determination, she left the office and marched through the twisting halls of Doan's infamous stone prison, heading for the interrogation cells. When she had first learned about the vast dungeon complex, built into the rock several kilometers below the castle, Sarah had been horrified. Historically, the nobility had used the stone prison to make political opponents vanish. Trapped at the heart of a rock column several kilometers high and hundreds of meters in diameter, any prisoners inside would be shielded from detection by scanners. A person could disappear forever in the underground labyrinth, spending the rest of their years in shackles, tortured for information or simple sadistic pleasure, without any hope of salvation. In the event a rescue was somehow attempted, the entire complex was rigged so it could be collapsed with a series of explosions that would kill not only the prisoners, but their would-be saviors as well. The carefully engineered detonator charges would activate in a precisely timed sequence, destroying the dungeon room by room while allowing the guards time to escape. The Royal Manse and other buildings on the surface, thousands of meters above, would suffer only a few mild, though unmistakable, tremors as the entire complex below was reduced to rubble. Garen had still been alive when Sarah learned all this. He had explained that the stone prison hadn't been used in over 40 years. It was a relic of a more brutal and repressive era. In response to public pressure brought to bear by the Senate, it had been closed down. It wasn't even staffed any longer. Yet at the urging of his betrothed, he swore that once he was king, he would have the infamous dungeon permanently sealed, a gesture to symbolize the new relationships he wished to forge between the nobles and the miners. But Garen was dead now, just like her father, and she was the one who had hired mercenaries to capture her enemy and bury him forever inside the stone prison's cold, dark cells. She couldn't help but wonder what they would think of what she had done. What would they say if they were here right now? Sarah pushed the thought from her mind. They weren't here. Her father and her husband were both gone, forever taken from her. And she was left to deal with the Sith Lord alone. It took her nearly 10 minutes to make her way from the office through the maze of passages and rooms to where the prisoner was being held. Although the corridors she traveled were illuminated by pale lights in the ceiling, many of the halls led off into darkness. Her mercenaries had only reopened one small section of the complex. The rest of it was still deserted. The man she was going to see was being held in one of the maximum security cells, accessible only by a single staircase guarded by locked durasteel doors at the top and bottom. The mercenary standing guard on the other side of the door at the top unlocked it at her approach, and she quickly made her way down the steep stairs. The door at the bottom similarly opened for her, revealing a small 10-meter by 10-meter guard station. Another locked durasteel door on the far wall led into the prisoner's cell. A small viewing window had been built into the door. There were two tables in the room. The larger stood off to the side of the door Sarah had just entered. The smaller was on wheels, measuring only a meter by half a meter. It had been pushed against the wall beside the cell door. Six of the soldiers she had sent to apprehend the prisoner were here, along with Lucia and the Huntress. The guards were seated in chairs around the larger table, playing cards. The two women were on opposite ends of the room, distancing themselves from those at the table and each other. Lucia was leaning against the wall for support, while the huntress sat on the stone floor, her legs crossed, hands in her lap and her eyes closed. It looked as if she might have been meditating. As Sarah entered, the guards jumped up to stand at attention, as did Lucia. The huntress opened her eyes and looked up at the princess, but otherwise made no move. Sarah wasn't even sure what the assassin was still doing here. She had already been paid for her services. But for some reason she had chosen to stay, as if she had some vested interest in the outcome of events. The princess shook her head. She had more important things she needed to worry about than the assassin. The prisoner still sedated. She asked,
"Yes, ma'am," one of the guards replied.
"He was given another dose an hour ago." She nodded and made her way to the wheeled table in the corner. Atop the table were nearly 3 dozen hypodermic needles, color-coded by label according to their contents. Sarah had prepared each of the needles herself. The ones marked with a green sticker contained Senflax. They needed to keep the prisoner drugged at all times to prevent him from escaping. The others, red, black, and yellow, were filled with various compounds she would need during her interrogation. From the corner of her eye, she saw Lucia making her way from the wall toward her. Once at her side, her friend spoke in a whisper soft enough that only she would be able to hear. "This isn't like you. Why are you doing this?" "You wouldn't understand," she replied just as quietly. "Hiring this assassin was one thing," Lucia continued, her voice rising only slightly with carefully held in check emotion. "But hiring mercenaries to secretly reopen the stone prison? What if the king finds out?" "He won't," Sarah assured her. "This has nothing to do with Garen or Doan." The dark-skinned woman refused to let it go. "Holding someone for torture and interrogation? It's not right. You know that." "He's a Sith, not a soldier like you were. A Dark Lord. He doesn't deserve your pity. Or mine." Lucia shook her head and turned away, but not before Sarah clearly saw the frustration and disappointment in her face. "Open the door," the princess called out to the guards. "I want to speak with the prisoner. Alone." At her words, the huntress sprang to her feet, causing Lucia to step forward protectively.
"I want to come with you,"
Vigtochi explained.
"Why?"
Sarah demanded, suddenly suspicious.
"Who else could have captured him for you?"
she replied, avoiding the question.
"Have I not earned the right?" "If she goes, I go too,"
Lucia insisted, crossing her arms. Sarah could have refused them. But deep inside, she still didn't want to face the monster from her past alone. And what harm was there now if they learned her secrets? She had concealed her true identity all these years only because her father feared retribution from this man. With him as her prisoner, she had no reason left to hide.
"The three of us then,"
she conceded, grabbing the little table and wheeling it into position to bring it inside with them. "Lock the door behind us," she instructed the guards. Lucia was worried about the princess. Ever since their visit to the Jedi Temple, she had sensed something different about her. But she had never suspected she was capable of going to such extreme lengths. She hadn't known mercenaries had been hired to reopen the stone prison. If she had, she would have tried to talk Sarah out of such a foolish and dangerous plan. The princess must have known she would object, however, and so she hadn't told Lucia what was happening until after the prisoner was safely secured in a cell. She had known about the dungeons, of course. As part of the princess's official security detail, she needed to memorize every possible entrance and exit to the castle. Up until 3 days ago, however, she had only ever seen blueprints. Coming face to face with the stone prison was an entirely different experience. As soon as she stepped off the long turbolift ride down from the surface, she had sensed the evil of this place. The stale air had an underlying stench of death. Too many dark and unspeakable things had happened here over the centuries. Since then, Lucia had kept a careful eye on her friend. She could see something eating away at her, and she feared the unholy gloom of the stone prison would only make things worse. The princess was obsessed with the man in the dungeon, yet at the same time, she was unable to face him. Lucia knew it had something to do with her past. But when she had tried to broach the subject, the princess had refused to discuss it. Left with no other options, she'd been forced to wait for Sarah to make the next move. Now that she was about to face the prisoner for the first time, Lucia was determined to be at her side. She might not understand what her friend was going through, and she might not agree with what she was doing, but she was still going to be there in case the princess needed her. As the three women entered the cell, Lucia was surprised at how much smaller it was than the room on the other side of the door. Just 3 meters square. The cell was dimly lit, the only illumination coming from a single sputtering light overhead. The prisoner was restrained against the far wall. His arms were extended out to either side above, his hands shackled by chains dangling from iron rings set into the ceiling. His legs were similarly splayed, his ankles cuffed to the wall behind them. Because of the drug, he was unable to stand erect. His weight sagged forward, pulling the chain supporting him tight and putting incredible strain on his wrists and shoulders. The pain in his joints would have been excruciating were it not for the numbing effects of the Senflax coursing through his system. His head was slumped down, his paralyzed muscles making it impossible for him to look up as they entered. Sarah selected a needle with a red label from the table and injected it directly into the carotid artery running up the side of his thick neck. An instant later, his head snapped up and back in reaction to the powerful stimulant. Seeing his face, Lucia gasped in surprise. The other two glanced at her momentarily, but when she shook her head, they dismissed her reaction as unimportant and returned their attention to the man in chains. It had been more than 20 years, but Lucia had recognized him instantly. Dez had been her commanding officer, her leader, her hero. Without him, none of the Gloomwalkers would have survived the war. He had saved their lives on Kashyyyk. He saved them again on Trandosha. Time after time, he had brought them through impossible situations against overwhelming odds, right up until their final mission together on Fasira. And then Lieutenant Ulibor had ordered the enforcers, the Sith military police, to arrest him. She had never heard from Dez again. Like the rest of the unit, she assumed he had been executed for disobeying orders and striking a superior officer. And even though she had believed him to be dead, she had vowed she would never forget the face of the man who had once meant everything to her. When she saw him, hanging from the shackles in the cell, she hadn't been able to contain her gasp of surprise. Fortunately, neither the princess nor the huntress had realized why she had gasped, and Lucia recovered enough to avoid another outburst. But though she managed to keep her emotions from showing on the surface, inside, her world had exploded. She doubted whether Dez had recognized her. He was drugged, for one thing, and she was only one face among many in the unit. He was the leader they all looked up to. He was the one they idolized. In the Gloomwalkers, she was just a low-ranking sniper, one of a dozen junior troopers in the squad. Did she really expect he'd remember her after all this time? Not that it mattered. She didn't dare say anything with Sarah and the huntress standing right there. The princess was obsessed with the prisoner. She was gripped by some madness that had driven her to previously unthinkable acts. If she discovered that Lucia and Dez knew each other, there was no telling what she would do, or what she might order the Itochi to do. And so Lucia was forced to just stand there, helpless to do anything to help Dez. Just like the day the enforcers had dragged him away. Sarah instantly recognized the face from her nightmares. He was older, but his features were unmistakable. The bald head, the thick, heavy brow, the cruel set of his eyes and jaw. Beside her, Lucia gasped loudly as the prisoner fixed the three women with his cold, merciless gaze. Sarah glanced over and saw a strange expression on the ex-soldier's face. Something had obviously upset her. Lucia was the bravest person the princess had ever met. yet she was clearly distraught. Was it possible she was actually afraid of this man, even while he was chained? Or did she feel sympathy for him? She knew Lucia disapproved of what she was doing. Did her friend think she was a monster now? Or was it something else? Her friend's unexpected reaction unsettled Sarah, and she fought the instinct to turn and flee from the man in the cell. She had nothing to fear from her prisoner this time. This time, he was the victim, not her. No matter what Lucia thinks, Sarah thought, I have to do this. Do you know who I am? She demanded. His answer came slowly. The stimulant she had given him only countered the physical effect of the Senflax. The toxin still clouded his mind, dulling his focus and concentration.
An enemy from the past.
The words were slightly slurred, and it was impossible to read anything into the flat, emotionless tone. She couldn't tell if he actually recognized her, or if he was just making a generalization based on the fact that she had taken him prisoner. My name is Sarah. Khalib was my father. She told him. She wanted him to know. She wanted him to understand who had done this to him.
Is this revenge for him?
He asked after a long moment, the Senflax making his mind lethargic.
Or for what I did to you?
Both, she replied, picking up a needle marked with a black sticker. Again, she injected it into his neck. This time, however, the effects were markedly different. His eyes rolled back in his head and his teeth slammed shut, narrowly missing his tongue. Then his body began to convulse, causing his chains to rattle madly. Lucia turned away in disgust, unable to watch. The huntress leaned in closer, enthralled by his chemical-induced torment. Sarah let the seizure continue for a full 10 seconds before injecting him with one of the yellow needles to counter the effects. Do you see the kind of punishment I can inflict on you? She asked. Now do you understand what it's like to be at the helpless mercy of another? He didn't answer right away. His breathing was ragged, his face and bare scalp covered in sweat from the pain he had just endured. A spastic tremble had seized his left hand, causing it to twitch and flex madly in its iron cuff.
You have no lessons to teach me, he gasped. I understand suffering in ways you will never comprehend.
Why did you kill my father? Sarah asked, picking up another black needle and holding it up for him to see.
Khalib did not die by my hand.
She stabbed the needle into his neck, inducing another seizure. She let this one continue nearly twice as long before administering the antidote. She expected him to pass out from the pain, but somehow he managed to stay conscious. Lies will be punished, she warned him.
I did not kill your father,
he insisted, though his voice was so weak she could barely hear him.
I told you that I saw another in my visions,
the huntress reminded her.
A young woman with blonde hair. Perhaps she was the killer.
Sarah glared at the Itochi before turning her attention back to the man in chains. Is this true?
He didn't answer, though a cunning smile played at the corner of his lips.
Tell me what happened to my father!
Sarah shouted, slapping him across the face. Her nails raked his cheek, slicing the flesh with 4 long, deep furrows. Blood welled up quickly into the wounds and began to run down toward his chin. Bane didn't answer, however. Jaw clenched, Sarah reached down to grab another of the black needles, but Lucia seized her wrist.
He didn't kill your father! The bodyguard shouted. Why are you still doing this? Sarah yanked her wrist free angrily. He may not have done the deed, but he's the reason my father is dead, she insisted.
She turned back to the prisoner. Do you deny that?
Khalib was weak,
the man muttered.
When he ceased to be of use, he was destroyed. This is the way of the dark side.
Sarah picked the needle up from the table.
This won't bring your father back,
Lucia pleaded.
I want him to see what it's like to be helpless and afraid, Sarah hissed.
I want him to know what it's like to be a victim. I want him to understand that what he did to my father, to me, was wrong.
The weak will always be victims, the prisoner said, his voice growing stronger. That's the way of the universe. The strong take what they want and the weak suffer at their hands. That is their fate. It is inevitable. Only the strong survive, because only the strong deserve to.
You only believe that because you don't know what it's like to suffer, the princess shot back at him.
I know what it means to suffer, he replied, his words no longer thick and slurred. I used to be a victim, but I refused to accept my lot in life. I made myself strong.
As he spoke, drops of blood from the gashes on his cheek fell from his chin and splashed to the floor.
Those who are victims have no one to blame but themselves. They do not deserve pity. They are victims because of their own failures and weaknesses.
But it didn't matter how strong you were, Lucia said, suddenly jumping into the discussion. Don't you see that? You still ended up as a prisoner.
Had I been stronger, I would not have been captured, he countered, a fierce light burning in his eyes. If I am not strong enough to escape, I will continue to suffer until I die. But if I am strong enough to escape...
Sarah slammed the black needle down and grabbed one of the green, injecting him with another dose of Senflax.
You will never leave this dungeon alive, she promised as her victim slipped back under the influence of the drug, his eyes glazing over as his head lolled forward again. Even drugged and chained, she thought, he's still cunning enough to be dangerous.
Caught up in arguing with him, she had almost missed the signs of the Senflax wearing off. She had thought it would be hours before he needed another shot, but she had underestimated the effects of the other drugs she had been pumping into his system. She'd have to be more careful in the future.
Right now, I'm weak,
the man mumbled with his head staring down at the floor, refusing to give up.
Powerless. You inflict suffering on me because you are strong enough to do so. Your actions prove the truth of what I believe.
Sarah shook her head angrily. No. My father taught me to help those in need. The strong should raise the weak up, not trample them down. He believed in that, and so do I.
Somehow the prisoner managed to lift his head, fixing her with his bleary-eyed stare. Your father's beliefs got him killed.
The princess raised her hand to slap him again, then froze, struggling to control the flood of grief and rage that threatened to overwhelm her.
You're not thinking straight,
Lucia said softly, placing a hand on her shoulder.
You need to calm down.
Her friend was right. He was inside her head. She needed to get out of the room and regroup. The last shot she'd given him would keep him helpless for at least another hour. Time enough for her to collect her thoughts before facing him again. Lowering her hand, she turned her back on him without saying a word, leaving the Huntress and Lucia alone with him in the cell.
Chapter 17.
As the princess stormed out of the cell, Lucia resisted the urge to go after her. She knew Dez's words had hurt. Normally, she would have gone to comfort her friend. But everything had changed when she'd walked into the cell and recognized the man chained to the wall. The Huntress was staring at her, smiling. The Itochi was evil, twisted. She had enjoyed watching Sarah torture the victim. She had relished in his suffering. Lucia suspected she took pleasure in Sarah's emotional torment as well. She returned the assassin's gaze but refused to speak. For a moment their eyes locked, and then the Itochi turned away with an air of indifference, as if Lucia was beneath her notice. The bodyguard continued to stare at her back as the Huntress followed in the princess's wake, leaving her alone with the prisoner. At first, a part of her had actually wondered if Dez deserved what was being done to him. After all, he was a Sith Lord now.
She had fought on the side of the Sith during the war, but she was only a soldier. Like Lucia herself, most of her comrades in arms had enlisted because they saw no other way to escape the suffering and hopelessness of their lives. They had turned against the Republic out of desperation, but they were still decent men and women. The Sith Lords, however, were monsters. Ruthless and cruel, they cared nothing for the soldiers who followed them. Sometimes it even seemed they enjoyed the death and suffering inflicted on the enlisted personnel under their command. Their mere presence inspired terror in the ranks. And at night, the troops would share stories of the horrors they inflicted on their enemies or their allies who had failed them. Lucia never thought she could feel pity for a Sith Lord, but she also never imagined Dez would become one of them. If Dez really had murdered Kalib, Lucia reasoned, then he had brought this on himself. But when questioned, he insisted he wasn't the one who had killed the healer, and Lucia was convinced he was telling the truth. Even the Itochi assassin had seemed to believe him. But despite all the evidence, the accounts of the Jedi, the Huntress's mention of a mysterious blonde woman at the scene, and the refusals of Dez himself, Sarah had not been swayed from her course. The princess had refused to listen to facts or reason. Her hatred blinded her to everything else. She had stormed off in anger, but Lucia knew it was only a matter of time until she returned to subject Dez to another round of torture. She had seen the madness in Sarah's eyes. The princess hungered for revenge. Lucia recognized that look. She had seen it in the eyes of her fellow soldiers when the enforcers had dragged Dez away in cuffs. Whether he was guilty of the crime didn't matter. Sarah was going to make her prisoner suffer for the death of her father, and there was nothing anyone could say or do to make her change her mind. And even if he didn't kill Kalib, she thought, he's still a monster. He probably deserves to die. During the interrogation, she had listened with growing horror to the words coming from the prisoner's mouth. It was clear Dez had embraced the teachings of the dark side in ways she could never have imagined. He was not the man she remembered. The camaraderie of the Gloomwalkers meant nothing to the creature he had become. But it means something to me, Lucia thought. Lucia still believed in the ideals of the Gloomwalkers. They looked out for one another. They counted on one another to survive. There was honor in their code of unity.